Hello, and thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. Today I'm talking about a really special photograph. I really like this one, and I think this one's about 9 months old or so. It's one of the photographs that I've taken maybe during the last year. I really appreciate this one, though, and the reason for that is maybe significant only to me in some way, but this is from kind of my home. Well, yeah, from my home, from my neighborhood, back when I was a child growing up in Southern Oregon. And I really grew up looking out the back to the southern view of the sky during the summertime. And it was really cool. So that's why I really like and connect with this photograph here. And it's really pretty. It shows the Milky Way kind of diagonally across the sky as you look over and see part of Sagittarius, part of Scorpio, part of Mars and Saturn that were up at that time. During that part of the year. And it's really cool. You see some of the illumination from the city light, and maybe from the moonlight that might be out, that kind of puts a little bit of a light cast onto Mount Pickett that's out there, but one of the mountains around the southern side of Grants Pass. It's really cool, but this one is really unique and really special to me, and definitely reminds me a lot of being home and kind of what that's all about.
You can see more of my work at BillyNewmanPhoto.com. You can check out some of my photo books on Amazon. I think you can look up Billy Newman under the authors section there and see some of the photo books on film, on the desert, on surrealism, on camping. Some cool stuff over there. So 360 degree photo work over the last couple weeks, which has been really cool, and I've enjoyed it a lot. I really like doing the 360 stuff. I think back in June of 2018, we had done a bunch of podcasts about some of the 360 photography stuff that we were trying to do, some of the video stuff that we were doing with the GoPro Fusion at the time. And that was all really cool, and I liked that video a lot. This time I was working with a Ricoh Theta Z1, and I was going around to a few locations to try and get some photographs. Specifically, I think photographs a lot in this circumstance, not so many videos. But yeah, really interested in the 360 photography stuff that I was able to edit together and to capture during that time. So that was cool. But I went out to an area in central Oregon that was pretty cool, and went up on like a hillside to, do some 360 work. And it's cool out there because you can really see the topography of how the Great Basin was formed at the, well, I guess like during the whole era of the Pleistocene, as it was for a long standing period of time, like a lake. It was just a big lake out there. And then as things started changing at the end of the Pleistocene, I think there was huge changes that ended the Great Basin stuff, that ended a lot of the megafauna that was in the area. And that kind of changed the topography of the landscape over the last 10,000 years to be something that's much more of the high desert, sagebrush, juniper tree, exposed rock landscape that we see today, and a lot less of the forested, temperate kind of mountain climate that we have through the Cascades and through part of Oregon. I'm sure it was always more dry given the rain shadow of the Cascade Mountains there, but I think that for a long period of time, as according to signs posted on my drives in areas where I go hiking sometimes. But, you know, like when you go up to some place and it says, you know, this area so such and such time ago had these animals in it. Well, you see like giant beavers, or you see like camels, or giant sloths, I guess they had in the area too. There's all sorts of stuff that they had that ended up being wiped out, I don't know, 100,000 years ago, 60,000 years ago to what? 10, 20, 10,000 years ago, something like that. There's a lot of changes that happened over the period of the Pleistocene, I guess during what they call the Quaternary period, a period of glaciations that the Earth has been involved in for the last 100,000 or 200, maybe million years. I'm not sure. It's the last couple hundred thousand years we've been going in these cycles of glaciations. We're in an ice age period. So we go into an ice age, like we have ice on the Earth right now. It'll be more ice at a point and then less ice at a point. More ice at a point, less ice at a point. I guess that's been going on for what they say, somewhere around like 200,000 years of these 30,000-year periods of glaciation to non-glaciation, where like I think we're like on the far end of the glacial maximum now. So we had the glacial maximum about like what, 11,000, 12,000 years ago, Or is that right? No, it must have been like 15, 20,000 years ago that we were at the maximum. Then it started receding, I suppose. That's when we were able to... No. That doesn't make sense. We had like the land bridge, like the Beringia stuff, where people got over. That was probably 15 to 20,000. Sea levels were lower. They sailed at like 400 feet. They skirted along the coastlines. They came over through the land. So that was all pretty long ago. Well, anyway, at some point, like I was there, like I'm going to figure out, wait, let me remember. Let me think back to 15,000 years ago. Where was I? Yeah, I wasn't here. So I don't know what happened. But apparently there's been some recorded evidence that I was learning about. And I think it's like Monteverde down in Chile. And that's a location where I think they had carbon dated something to 15,000 years old, like human remains, human element remains. There's like a few locations here in Oregon where they I guess have evidence of the Clovis people. That's sort of around like the 11, 12, 13,000 year mark. And then there's other evidence of things that are, I don't know, within like the, it's tough. It's like anything from like 7,500 years to 15,000 years ago seems to all kind of be in flux of a date, because there's really not many perfect ways to date that. And if it's a cultural artifact, like an arrowhead or a pot shard or a scraper, there's some indication of how those things are going to be created, or how those artifacts are going to be created, and how those are going to remain. Like Folsom points or Clovis points are pretty distinct from each other, but they're not really culturally distinct from each other. So it could be like a variation of many different tribes and languages and peoples, all well unrelated to each other, but related with a similar vein of technology for a few thousand years of, you know, their tool use shape was kind of similar because they're all kind of from a similar descendancy. But I think when you get like a more than 100 miles away, your languages separate over like a couple generations. You're just going to speak different languages. But man, wild stuff. Anyway, so I don't remember where we even started with this, but I was out in Eastern Oregon exploring the Great Basin. I went up on a hillside in public land, and I was doing some 360 photography work with the Ricoh Theta Z1. That's what it is. And yeah, I was capturing some stuff on a hillside, really beautiful areas up there where those ridges kind of drop in and out. And so it's cool when you get like up to a higher elevation, you can kind of see the pockets of where these lakes and pools of water and had kind of sat and rested for what seems like. I think I was saying something about recording some 360 photographs up on some public land in the high desert in the Lake County Great Basin area of Eastern Oregon. Beautiful spot over there. I really enjoy it. And yeah, it was awesome to use the Ricoh Theta Z1 to be capturing some images up in that area. It's cool when you're at a higher elevation, and with the 360 camera, you can kind of, I don't know, it provides a little bit of a different perspective. It seems silly to say like wider, but when you kind of replay those images and you're able to sort of look around in context of what's to the left and to the right of you, you're kind of able to put together the context of the landscape a little better and a little faster than you could if you just had a series of individual photographs that had segments of the wider landscape captured in it. So it was cool at that higher elevation. You could kind of look down to areas that we had been hiking around earlier in the day through some of the ridges and troughs that would be over in that area. And you can look down, you know, it's like 500 feet down in elevation to what we thought was kind of the mountaintop pass. And then past that is another maybe 1,000 foot or a couple hundred foot drop in elevation as it goes down toward the lake basin area. So all that was pretty cool. And what was also cool about it is just sort of visualizing how populated that area had been in the past. I think, prior to the Western expansion of the United States, and as thousands of years had passed by, and this region of land in the Northwest, it had been populated, and that region specifically had been populated by nomadic tribes that had been able to travel and subsist off of the wild game that was there. I think a lot of like antelope and deer, and it looks like bighorn sheep by some of their, some kind of sheep, but
It looks like that from some of their pictographs and petroglyph information that they left there. And the dynamics of some of those populations of animals have changed in the time. Now, given like modern day, I don't know if we're going to see a lot of sheep out there in Lake County, but there's one drawn on a rock out there, so they must have been trying to look for it. There's a lot of them in the Southwest as you move into the, I think, the Modoc tribes. From that's more of a 3,000 to 2,000. I don't know. It's probably about 3,000 to 600 years ago, sort of a thing. But, or 100 years ago, really. I think that was like Captain Jack over there. Captain Jack's stronghold for the Modoc Indian Reservation area. That was like in the Indian Wars of the 1850s. So they lasted till then. But yeah, there's some information about some of the Paiute Indians. I think the northern Paiute that were in that area of southeastern Oregon, Nevada, then into Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico, if I kind of understood right. But I know there's some fluctuations in there and differences in timing and stuff. But yeah, it's all pretty cool stuff. It was really it was awesome to get out there. It was cool to get out and kind of walk around in some areas of some public land where we still have some access and still get out to try and do some photography stuff, even in this period where you're supposed to stay home and there's a lockdown. It was cool to kind of get out and try and do some exploring and some social distance conscious. I mean, hey, that's fine with me. I don't really have to be around a lot of people. It's better to do landscape wildlife photography work while you're sort of in some type of isolation. I'm sure like a lot of hunters are kind of considering something like that too. You know, hunters, fishermen, people that like hiking, or you know, a lot of those solo activities. It's cool that you know, this time sort of has provided a little bit of a reset for probably a lot of people out there to have a bit more time to invest in some of the things that they would want to. I suppose a lot of folks are probably stuck more in their local area, but it's a great time to get to invest in some things that seem more important to you. So that's what I've been trying to do. Hope you guys are doing well. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. You can check out more at billynewmanphoto.com. I've been doing a ton of updates over there. Is there a plane taking off? Sounds like there's a prop plane that's about to fly over my head. It's like that scene in North by Northwest where Cary Grant starts getting run down by that biplane. That'd be scary. So that's not in my future. You can check out more information at billynewmanphoto.com. You can go to billynewmanphoto.com/support if you want to help me out and participate in the value for value model that we're running this podcast with. If you receive some value out of some of the stuff that I was talking about, you're welcome to help me out and send some value my way through the portal at billynewmanphoto.com/support. You can also find more information there about Patreon and the way that I use it if you're interested or feel more comfortable using Patreon. That's patreon.com/billynewmanphoto. As we move into 360 video, it's just a whole new threshold, or 4K 360 video. It's this whole threshold of stuff that I've not really worked on in media before. And I've not really, I guess what would it be? Like, I haven't rendered it. Or I haven't brought a 360 video file. I haven't ever brought a 360 video file into like Final Cut Pro before. So I was trying that out this weekend and I had to upgrade a lot of stuff. I had to upgrade my Mac to Mac OS High Sierra, which has been out for a long time, but I've been kind of delaying on that because I wanted to, well, I just had a stable system and I try and use my computer for work a lot of times. So I really don't try and do updates that I don't have to do with some stuff. And I don't know. It's good that I waited 6 months to put iSierra on it, but it runs fine. It runs stable. And really, I was most interested in trying to work on this 360 video project, which takes Final Cut 10.4, which is where they bring in some of those features for 360 video and VR editing and production. So it was kind of cool trying to check out, but oh my goodness, is that 13-inch MacBook of mine really struggling when it tries to render out even just 1 minute of footage, or when it tries to render in a 360 graphic element that's supposed to exist, you know, like on a dimensional plane. It's interesting. You can put text out into space in the three-dimensional, well, not three-dimensional, but in the 360 space. you can look to the north, let's say, and see words that are printed or, you know, some kind of graphic that's laid out there and rendered into the frame, I guess is what you would call it, or into the virtual environment. It's just sort of stuck there. And so as you look around, as the video elapses, you'll see this graphic object layered into the frame. And I can only imagine what kind of processing it takes to really produce some of those effects in the back end. It's amazing that we're able to make, what is it, equirectilinear images? Equirectilinear, I think, is the format. I don't know. It's one of the formats that you see. That's where you see like the stitching of the two 180 degree images sort of melded together. And it's really interesting looking at that footage. And I guess a phone is a pretty effective viewer for it in the moment. But I'm looking at other stuff like the, I think it's the Gear, not the Gear VR. Well, there's the Gear VR, the HTC Vive. There's like the Oculus. I think it's Oculus, right? The Oculus VR. There's like a cheap one now. I was really impressed, like it was like $200. It was like $199 to get a screen and goggles to do some of this 360 video experience. And I'm trying to think about like business ventures that are sort of attached to this with a new medium that's sort of approaching. Like I think a couple of years ago it was the advent of aerial drone footage. You know, before then you had to get a helicopter and a gimbal, and that's a $100,000 shot to get aerial footage over your property or, you know, whatever it is. And so now it's just so much more, I don't know, possible than it used to be. I remember watching, I don't know, I think there was like a movie that had this gimbal shot, and they talked about it in the behind the scenes stuff, where they had this cable camera that ran for like 200 yards as it sort of swept in and sort of did this one shot through this long sweeping intro into like this, you know, this big opening scene. But they had this big cable camera. It ran across a football field, basically, a whole action field. And they pulled this camera across, so it'd be this smooth kind of gliding shot that was just a little bit, I don't know, 20, 30 feet above everyone. And they couldn't really pan it with just a crane. So they're talking about technically how they engineered this shot. And this was back in, I don't know, 1999, 2000. And now it's just that's an amateur ability, where you can get a drone with a gimbal and put it 20 feet in the air and have it follow in for 200, 300 feet and have a perfectly still 4K image that tracks in on a party, or, you know, looks really cinematic, or, you know, anything like that. It's just amazing what kind of options there are now with the way you're able to develop media. And so it's cool thinking about just the level or the simplicity that we'll be able to work in rendering or work in producing 360 or virtual reality footage or drone footage 10 years on from now. Like, if you think about it for a moment, like 10 years ago, it was pretty hard to drop in like high definition footage onto your laptop or computer to like render out. What, 2008, April 2008, May 2008. That was still like a pretty common. It was starting to happen. HD, or, you know, amateurly recorded HD footage was starting to happen. But really, it was pretty rare to get HD cameras on the market for inexpensive prices in that era. It was still all standard definition stuff. I mean, while I was in college doing new media stuff, all the camera project, or, you know, all the video projects that we worked on were all in standard def. It was really an interesting invention that we switched over to 16:9 for a lot of the, you know, the standard output of a lot of the files that we'd render. When I started, the first camera, like the first camcorder I was really working with, was a Canon XL1 in like the 2002 to 2006-07 era. And man, a fantastic camera. I think there was like a lot of documentaries that were put together with that. You know, it was a real workhorse kind of professional camera. And I was really fortunate to be a person in Southern Oregon getting to work with that level of video technology back in the early 2000s. It was really a cool opportunity that I had. And then kind of thinking about that now, just the level of like, wow, okay, so we moved on from standard definition. We moved on from the 4:3 aspect ratio. We moved on from tape media, or from AVI capture files and, you know, capture card systems. And so all that's kind of transitioned into much simpler H.264 or ProRes file systems, the digital file systems that are easier to upload, easier to write to a computer. And amazing what processors can do now too, just in the level of work that they're able to output. And what's interesting is like so 10 years ago, the difficulty of rendering HD footage that we had, that's similar to now 10 years later in 2018, the difficulty I'm having trying to render out this 360 degree footage that's been recorded. And it's just so much, you know, you can imagine it's like an HD video in front of you. Now this is a 4K video that's all around you. And it just seems like, you know, it just seems like dozens more, I don't know, just seems like a way bigger file to render out. I guess that's really what it is. 4K files are real big. And for this virtual reality 360 thing, it really seems like you need that level of resolution so that when you look in any particular spot, you know, through like a VR headset, you get a full resolution image from that single vantage point that you're looking at. And when I was talking earlier about ventures or, you know, business ventures that I'd like to incorporate into the 360 video idea, I was really thinking a lot about like wedding photography events. So, you know, there's wedding videographers, but I'm thinking now with like the release of the GoPro 360 Fusion, which has, I think it's like an integrated digital gimbal support. So as you move the camera around through three-dimensional space, the camera kind of digitally reacts to the motion that you've created. And so it sort of stabilizes that. So I guess consider you're walking and you're taking steps. And so you kind of have a trot to the motion of the camera. Well, I guess apparently this gimbal is supposed to, this digital gimbal doesn't, you know, work in the real world, but it takes the video file and it, I guess it's able to gimbal it, whatever that means, but it's able to smooth that out and stitch it together so that, you know, you kind of lose a lot of that shakiness to the video. I guess they've had stabilization for years, but apparently they're explaining at least that it might be a different level of it. So it might be an interesting thing to check out. But what I was hopeful to do was, you know, try and do something where you'd record like a 360 video of, let's say, like a wedding ceremony. And then as an offer to a bride and groom, you give them a headset and you give them the 360 experience so that they can either, I guess, give that to family that wasn't there, perhaps. Really, that's just like a Facebook opportunity in a big way, like, because you can just share those videos, you know, share those videos online and kind of see them digitally through the browser, which is a really exciting thing about social media sharing. YouTube 360, Facebook 360, and I think Vimeo 360 are all video sharing platforms where you can view that content in a browser. I think Chrome works the best for it right now. I had a lot of trouble in Safari viewing 360 browser stuff, but real interesting stuff, and it's been kind of cool. I was trying to think though, yeah, like, oh, it'd be cool, yeah, set up for the, you know, set up a 360 video, and then years from now you can come back. There goes a big truck. But years from now you can come back and like put on goggles or view just everything that was happening at a wedding. But it's a really immersive experience. I thought it'd be kind of cool. So I guess all that's to say, I rented a GoPro 360 Fusion. I think it should be here this week, so I'm going to try and run through and put together like a portfolio of 360 images and 360 videos from a lot of the locations, you know, a lot of the natural outdoor landscape locations that I've sort of come to learn about over the last 10 years of doing landscape photography across Oregon and the Northwest. So I'm hopeful to try and do that over like the Memorial Day weekend. I think it's going to be kind of fun, trying to hit it hard.
Thanks a lot for checking out this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. Hope you guys check out some stuff on billynewmanphoto.com. A few new things up there, some stuff on the homepage, some good links to other outbound sources, some links to books, some links to some podcasts, links to some blog posts, all pretty cool. But yeah, check it out at billynewmanphoto.com. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the podcast. Talk to you next time.